Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm still employed on this center, on this, on the show.
They're getting the paperwork done.
Yeah, they're coming in. It's only 8 a.m. Our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Jeff Blair, Sportsnet.ca columnist and co-host of Blair and Barker. What a nice weekend of baseball, Jeff.
Oh, it was spectacular.
I bet you really enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, I did. I like watching bats starting pitching. It's tremendous.
Yeah, you had the best tweet the other day when they had the postponement, and it was just feels like a win. And I went, that's exactly how I feel. I just want to, that's as good as it gets right now, is they go, hey, we're not going to play this baseball game right now. You go, thank you, I'll take my summer night. Okay, so let's just start with this, very broad. Which of these issues right now is the one that's concerning you or bothering you the most? Hey, Jeff, we got you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. The question was, which of the issues that's plaguing the Blue Jays right now is bothering you or concerning you the most?
Okay.
Oh, that's it. It's open-ended. Everything that's affecting them right now.
I'm cutting in and out here. Which of the issues really, I don't even know if it's an issue. It's pinpointing one thing. They can't beat good teams. I mean, I guess that's an issue because that's who you're facing when you're trying to get a wild card spot. I mean, they've lost the season series to Seattle, Minnesota, and Cleveland. So if there's the tie in the wild card race, that's certainly significant. And they're just not very good against teams over 500. And it's odd, right? If you look at the stats, they're offensively, they're right up at the top, if not at the top. The bullpen, which, I still think is all smoke and mirrors, well, for 6 weeks now, it's been one of the best bullpens in baseball. So, but I keep bringing it back to put the Jays up against, let's leave aside Houston for a minute. Let's even throw the Yankees into the discussion now. But put them up against the Yankees, the Rays, the Guardians, the Twinkies, in Seattle, and try to find the area where the Jays have the biggest edge over those other teams. You can't. I guess the lineup, but the lineup doesn't score much against those teams. And I find that really perplexing that the Jays are getting decent production statistically. They're getting decent production out of their offense. Statistically, their bullpen's okay to better than okay. But I'm not certain they're better than a lot of those other teams. I'll throw Baltimore in there as well. I think they're better than Baltimore. But I can't honestly sit here today and say they're better than the Guardians. They haven't shown that, but they've had to play the Guardians. Better than the Twins? I still think they're better than the Twins. Better than the Mariners? Nope. Better than the Rays? I mean, the Rays are the Rays, and they're getting half their team back in the next 2 weeks. So that's what really concerns me is, never mind this part of the team is doing well, this part of the team is doing very well, this part of the team isn't doing. Combined, they're just not as good as they need to be to secure a playoff spot.
Yeah, and it's especially startling right now considering you face these Guardians and Orioles teams that have just had their way with you. Again, you're 2-4 against the Orioles. You could be facing them this week and end up behind them in the standings if things continue this way. That these were two teams that nobody had any real expectations of. We were talking about Jose Ramirez trades because the Guardians didn't look like they were going to be on track to win. Baltimore sold at the deadline, despite their recent run of success. And the Jays are in this pack with them where we don't really know what the gap is between them and those two clubs. It's really it's really, really difficult right now, especially since the things you mentioned are the now problems, but the stuff that's not working for them is the future problem. I guess for me, the thing that's really kind of chief among them is when we talk about this team being better than a lot of those groups, they're certainly better when Springer is in the lineup, right? The team record with him in the lineup versus now without, we've got almost, I think we've got over 100 games without Springer now, and the team is essentially 500 without him. What's your read on when he returns, what the elbow looks like, whether this is a re-aggravation issue, this is a playing through the pain issue? What's your understanding of the state of Springer's elbow?
I mean, everything that has been suggested, and the Jays, I'll give them credit for this, and they're pretty consistent when it comes to dealing with injuries to their players in terms of what gets out on and off the record. They don't leak all that much, which, you know, if you're a player is a good thing. If you're in the media, it kind of sucks. But everything that we kind of hear secondhand about George Springer is that it's an injury that could require surgery in the offseason. I know he's expected back today, right? He's expected back today. I'm in the camp that says you need to do whatever you can to keep him in the lineup, in the batting order. I don't care if he plays in the field. I've got enough defensive cover in the outfield that I can make that work. If it's me, George Springer is DHing the rest of the year. You know, he might as well leave his glove in his locker or pack it up and send it down to Dunedin for spring training next year. That's the way I look at it. And I've said this, and I will maintain it. I don't think he's going to be the Blue Jays center fielder next year. I think he's going to be in right field. I don't know what that means for Teoscar Hernandez. Frankly, I'm not certain I'm all that worried about it, to be honest, because he's showing no indication that he wants to re-sign here. But you got to keep George Springer's bat in the lineup. I think they've got enough cover defensively for him now, and I know there's a trickle-down effect, right? Because if Springer's DHing and Kirk isn't catching, then Kirk isn't in the lineup. And I think we've seen that this is a better defensive team with Danny Jansen behind the plate than Alejandro Kirk. So something's going to have to give there. But, you know, I guess the thing that would really interest me, and I don't expect that I could get an answer for this, but if the Jays weren't in contention, would George Springer be shut down and be told to have surgery now and get ready for spring training? Now, I know that's a pure hypothetical, but that's kind of where I am with that elbow. Whatever they can do to keep him in the lineup is great. I don't want him in the field because I know he can hurt his elbow swinging. He probably hurt his elbow swinging more than he could in the field, but I can't take a chance on anything else happening to that guy right now. I really can't. And I brought him in here to have big at-bats in September and October. But at the end of the day, yeah, the defense, obviously, it's great, da-da-da, et cetera, et cetera. I'm paying George Springer all this money to be my big guy in August and September, or at least one of my big guys in August and September. I don't need him in the field necessarily.
Yeah, again, it just the way he does set the table for the rest of this lineup, it's obvious. And it just, yeah, he's a huge hole. You miss the defense when you see a guy like Raimel Tapia misplay a ball like he did yesterday in center field. But overall, you're right. Like they've got enough guys who should be able to field that position defensively. So
the other thing is, I just want to jump in. I want to jump in because the other thing Barker mentioned yesterday, which is really true, is the Jays' most consistent hitter. Now, Vladdy's been in a heater recently, but the Jays' most consistent hitter for the past couple of months has been Lourdes. And if you bring George Springer back in the lineup, then you could put Lourdes down into the fifth or sixth spot, or I don't know, maybe even the third spot, wherever you want to put him. But put him in a run-producing position as opposed to leading him off. And that makes your lineup longer because, as we saw yesterday, I mean, that bottom third of the lineup was basically a gimme yesterday for the Cleveland Guardians. It really was. And if you put Lourdes down in the middle of the order, then all of a sudden Matt Chapman slides down and you've got that kind of that, almost like that trap door, Matt Chapman hitting seventh, right? Here comes a guy who can turn in a fastball and give you a home run and give you a big hit down in the seventh spot. So I think that's almost as important as sort of getting George Springer, leadoff hitter, back in the orders. It restores a little bit of depth to the batting order.
So you mentioned like how this team just can't beat good teams. And yeah, it's the number one issue coming out of the weekend. And now we're looking at this spotlight on this. And especially in regards to Barrios, Shai wrote in his last column that we've spent a lot of time looking at his home road splits. But really, the one that people should be focusing on is that he's pitched 15 times against teams better than 500. And his ERA is 6.61. And in his 8 starts against teams below 500, it's 3.77. I remember talking to you during the offseason, and everyone was so excited about the potential for this Jose Barrios extension. And again, I don't think that there's a lot of anger looking back on it, because it seems so obvious at the time. But I guess I'm going to ask you 2 Barrios questions. But number one is just, do you think that he's going to be able to get back to where he was? And where is your level of confidence in that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a 10 out of 10 in terms of him getting back to where he was. I think the stuff's too good. I think the athlete's too good. This may be a hill that I'll die on for a reason that I can't necessarily explain. But I've got a ton of confidence in Jose Barrios. I really do. I think I don't know what the hell's happened this year, but I still think that there is, I don't know if there's an ace in there. I don't know how many aces there really are in baseball anymore, but I think he's a guy that can be a very consistent number 2 starter for you and log a lot of innings. And that has a lot of value in terms of when you're looking at a long-term contract. So I don't think if you're a Jays fan or if you're a Jays executive, you got no choice but to have faith in Jose Barrios. So you're going to drive yourself nuts because he's going to be around for a while. So, if you want to spend the next 6 years sort of clutching at pearls every time Jose Barrios' start comes up, I guess you can do that. But no, I think the guy's going to be fine. I really do.
Okay, so with Stripling potentially coming back this week, JD actually raised a pretty good point or a question about would you see the Blue Jays possibly going to a 6-man rotation down the stretch here?
Does Kikuchi have to be one of the 6?
Yes.
Well, I guess this is the reason why you think about it, is if you can't move him off of anything else and you still need innings, then are you, and you're trying to protect Manoah, like you're, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Ross Atkins would say yes. I just think you say Kikuchi in dry dock. I mean, let's see what happens tonight. And you know, like, it's funny. You go back, you look. When does you say Kikuchi pitched well? He's pitched well against the Yankees. I don't know what the hell that means, but he's pitched well against the Yankees this year. Now he hasn't had to face him for a while. Look, this whole thing with Kikuchi to me is very simple. He's Trent Thornton right now. Weekend, yes. The other contract is not a good looking contract right now. Let's deal with that in the offseason, right? Right now, the question is, how do I get through a 5-game span without completely taxing my bullpen? What gives me, or who gives me, the best chance of winning over 5 games? I mean, Mitch White to me is fine. He could be Stripling 2.0. Whatever, he's giving me a chance to compete. He's Max Castillo. That's fine. I just think you need to, at some point, you can't keep running Yusei Kikuchi out there and say, well, yeah, he only gave us 3 2/3, but, you know, the stuff is good and yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. This guy's track record suggests that he's not, he is what he is. There's a reason the Seattle Mariners punted him. And the reason they dropped him out of their rotation last year when they were going for a playoff spot, right? I mean, what does that tell you about the guy? So I just don't get the great mystery. I really don't. If he pitches well today, great. Then, you know, give him another start. If he has a bad start, bang. He's in the bullpen for me, and that's where he is the rest of the year. He's not in my postseason roster anyhow. Regardless of what happens, he's not in my postseason roster unless, you know, there's 3 catastrophic injuries. So I just, other than I guess the GM needs to justify the contract, I don't know why we're still sending him out there. And if it is the fact that the GM thinks he needs to justify the contract, I just don't get that. I really don't.
Yeah, it was one thing when, you know, the Jays had a little bit of a cushion in their wild card lead. It's another when, yeah, he's getting a start against the Orioles in August where they can leapfrog you in the standings in the very same series. So, yeah, I'm absolutely with you. The main reason that I thought, though, that maybe they would consider this, other than, yeah, they wanted to keep Kikuchi's arm as a starter and they didn't view him as a bullpen guy, is reading into the way they treated Manoah this week after, you know, they get two extra days off and they don't end up putting him on regular rest. They end up saying, yeah, we're going to protect you a little bit. What did you read into that?
I mean, I think they're Pete Walker, I think it's been pretty clear. They are going to take whatever opportunity they get him out of the game early. They're going to take that. Whenever they can give him an extra day's rest, they'll take that. But I just think it's a mug's game sitting there and saying, well, we'll run Yusei Kikuchi out there. We'll probably lose the game, but you know, it'll help Alek Manoah a bit. Look, this is an organization that spent all year telling us that it's not an issue. It's not an issue. He's a horse, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I never really entirely bought into that. But I look at what they did at the trade deadline. They didn't act to me like a team that really is concerned about Alek Manoah other than factoring in these extra days of rest. And, I think they've kind of boxed themselves here. You know, they put themselves in a corner by how they approach things at the trade deadline, and it is what it is. But yeah, I don't know, man. Look, using Yusei Kikuchi to, you know, give Alek Manoah a little bit of rest, and at this point, I have to ask myself, if I have to win every game to get in the playoffs and I'm essentially punting one game every five or one game every six, you know, why am I playing that game now? Why don't I just shut Manoah down? And, you know, that's clearly not something that they're going to do.
Yeah, they haven't given themselves much wiggle room. It seems like a humongous week of baseball ahead. Jeff Blair, looking forward to seeing and hearing you guys break it down on Blair and Barker after our show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, folks. Be well.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Blair, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As usual, Blair sums it up really, really well, which is the biggest concern is actually that they can't beat good teams.
Yeah, that's not great because you only play good teams from here on out, really.
I'm not as confident as he is that Berríos bounces back. I think that there are real warning signs with the four-seamer. And, yeah, it's just I've said this all along, and I'll continue to say it. I wonder at times about – like, I think that there's something, too, that when he puts guys on, that he has trouble getting out of jams because I think that he's got a little bit of the same thing Kikuchi was dealing with, it, which is some of this is mental, that he's having a tougher time compartmentalizing batter to batter, right? Like, that's the thing I've always loved about Alek Manoah. I really believe, like, he puts somebody on, he doesn't care. Like, he's not sure he's thinking about who's on base, but it's not affecting the way that he's pitching. I think that it affects Kikuchi, and I think that it affects Berríos. But it's really tough to watch a team that had the expectations that they have be basically neck and neck with the clubs that Blair outlined. That for this entire time, this entire season, we'd spent so much of the focus going, okay, well, so what if they're not a historically good Yankees team out of the gate? Okay, so maybe they're not the Astros, but they're the next tier down. And then there's a group that's behind them. That gap has shrunk this season, and you really would have thought that it was going to grow. You thought that between the Jays and the rest of that division and the rest of those other kind of middling ball clubs, and some of them have set completely spectacular unexpected seasons. Orioles, Guardians,
right,
for sure. But
the Blue Jays should have had a spectacular season as well if they're supposed to be World Series contenders.
Well, and people thought that Chicago, the White Sox, were going to take a big leap. So the Guardians being in that spot, it's just there was supposed to be a team that was in that tier. And I guess actually, you know, the White Sox have it worse. But I think that the Barrios thing is just simply people don't have the energy to really give Barrios as a major concern, because you have to be optimistic, right? You have to have that optimistic bias about him. He does have a track record that suggests that he should be able to get back. He's shown things recently, like, you know, the month that he just had before his last two starts. But there are so many concerns with this ball club right now that I think he's sheltered from people being really upset. If Kikuchi was fine this year, if Manoa wasn't showing signs of slowing down, and Barrios was the only starting pitcher that was struggling, yeah, you better believe people would be acting a little pissed off about the contract and completely forgetting what their position was when he signed that deal. Which, again, mine was absolutely, you have to do this. I was thrilled when they gave him that contract. I thought it was just an awesome piece of business. And even still, I absolutely believe that you still make that trade. Like, the trade for Barrios, still no-brainer. You can get the time machine, you do that again. But Springer being so important, being 33, having an elbow injury, and having to work around creative ways to keep him in the lineup, this team still consistently feeling like there's not enough versatility in the lineup. And again, Ennis and I talk about this all the time. It's not even about having just lefties, more lefty bats in there. Like, they stink at hitting left-handed pitching this year. So it's really not about versatility of their lineup from a hitting side of the plate they hit. It's about a versatility and approach. There's just too many guys that hit the exact same way. And they can have nights where you watch them and go, I'm sorry, that's a top five offense in baseball. And I know there's 162, blah, 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 blah. There are way too many nights with these guys where you go, what is happening here? They are just easy out, bad at bat, over and over and over again. They had to fire their manager this season. They don't look particularly deep when it comes to pitching that can come up and help them. Blair mentioned it. The bullpen is a lot of, you can spin it however you want, but come playoff time, there's not a, you can take those numbers of what they've done that last month, and you can push them forward, mm-hmm. But I would ask people who say that, how confident do you feel in a playoff game in really any of those guys coming out to pitch outside of Romano? And I think that's the true answer. There's just way too many issues with a baseball team that was built to be a contender in a timeline that seemed as though the league was open for the taking. All of a sudden, it's a tight group where you're having to really be optimistic about three or four things in order to kind of squint and see a team that could win this year.
They're just too streaky. Like, after John Schneider took over, they won 12 of 15 games, and we had a completely different feel about this team, completely different energy around talking about these guys every single night. But then something changed, and then they lost six of their last nine. So they do have the ability to go on these hot streaks, which is a positive feeling. Like, they're not win one lose one, but it still seems uncertain to why you get on these extreme hot streaks and these extreme lows. Like, it's so frustrating, of course, but there's a little bit of promise that they can string together wins. That's my positive spin.
I mean, they got to play the Royals AAA team.
They lost also that game. That was tough.
They lost one, but yeah. But they got to play the Red Sox and then the Tigers.
You can only beat who's in front of you.
Sure. And they also played a Cardinals team that wasn't able to send their two best players up. I think that has to do more with the surge. Like, looking at this mm-hmm. thing as a whole, again, to tie it into what the theme was today, which is playing good ball clubs and the gap between them and what was supposed to be the middle tier, the middle class. That's it. They can beat the bad teams. They can play who's in front of you when it's a bad team. They don't seem to be able to elevate and beat the teams that are in front of them when they're good. You're kind of hoping for splits against good teams and four-game series. That's not a good feeling with where the Blue Jays are at tonight. And again, tonight, Kikuchi on the mound. Sure, maybe. Maybe.
If you like
maybe
runs.
Maybe he gives you five innings.
You like
maybe
runs. He gives you. It's a good night. Bradish on the other side?
Well, you hope so for the Blue Jays' sake.
He's got a 6 ERA.
Orioles Blue Jays tonight. We'll preview it in the Wake and Rake with Blake Murphy. See if there's some angles. It sounds like Ailish like tipping her hand just a little bit in terms of what she likes
tonight.
Well,
I'm just saying. Yeah. Like, look at all the runs that could be scored.
That could be. They absolutely could be. tough watching Jay score four runs over the last three games and think about the offensive potential right now. Hopefully
I didn't say who would be scoring the runs.
Yeah. Blake Murphy, the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. That's next. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With J.D., Blake, and Ailish.
The Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Jays stink. Watching Blue Jays is an absolute chore right now. At least we have sweet, sweet NFL preseason football to distract us at times. Unless you're a Jets fan, which you're cursed. I'm sorry, Jets fans. You're cursed. It's over for you. It always was. It never was going to be okay. And the fact that you even got excited for a second is why the football gods punished you. But football is at least close enough where I go, just get to football. You know, it's the island in the distance of the content that is right now. But there's one thing that's carrying the people through, and that is the Wake and Rake hitting again. The Wake and Rake Friday, rip another W for the kids. feels good. Feels good to be rich. If you're gonna be through, if you're gonna be in trying times, you know, better to be with the elites, right?
That's right. That was twice in a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a big deal.
Yeah. How many days did I work last week? I think I worked 4 days last week, guys.
Wow.
I worked four.
You're really
days.
Grinding.
I was grinding. So yeah, 50% of the parlays hitting that week. So yeah, the Wake and Rake is hitting. It's fully back. Everybody's crushing. Everybody's nailing picks. Blake's all over the place. He picks in every sport. He's like, he'll pick tennis. He'll pick preseason football. He'll pick.
Obviously
baseball.
Not Wake and Rake because it was a Sunday. May have had quite the sweat on the CEBL championship game yesterday, which 17-point lead when the Elam ending started, and then it went down to a 1-point game.
Mm.
But the Hamilton Honey Badgers, pull it out for me.
Congrats to all one person that bet on that, Blake Murphy, in your winnings in this. I'd love to see the sites, because some websites, they put up the amount of tickets that are on a bet as a feature. Here's my guess, is that it was single digits for bets on the CEBL finals. Okay, so...
Wait, hold on that.
Money is money.
Didn't Drake... Yeah. Drake had an Instagram post where he said that it was a scandal and it was the worst officiating and his team lost. What happened there?
There was just, he didn't like the foul call on the, so the game got won on free throws, which is the one drawback of the Elam ending, is that the semifinals and the finals both ended at the free throw line. So they got to figure out a way to tweak that maybe. But
did you say the one issue with the Elam ending? That's the only issue you have with the Elam ending is the potential for 10 on free throws?
It's the primary issue.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Elam ending. I like the Elam ending for All-Star games and for
the CBL.
And yeah. And for
Summer
G League, actually,
they
I think
want
you should
to
bring
it
in. Yeah, sure, like, Summer League, whatever. But a real basketball game.
I don't want,
game,
like, meaningful NBA games being decided that way, but...
No, there was just that real push after the All-Star game, the first time they debuted it, and it worked out perfectly when people went, why is this not the way? And I was like, you mean other than the obvious 500 different reasons as to why not? But, okay, sure. We've done the Concern Index a lot. It's basically, here's a preview of Jay's Talk Plus today, is Concern Index take day 13. This
now,
is, what do you got?
The top of my Concern Index right now is that the Concern Index has, it needs load management right now. Mm. It's like every pitch it throws, it's like grabbing the elbow, a little sore. It's Alek Manoah out there. The Concern Index needs like an IL stint to rest up for the stretch run.
It's just, I cannot believe so many times when this team has said their struggles this year, right? I've gone, and I really do believe that I've been on the, I get like lesser optimistic side of the Blue Jays for a lot of the season. I looked at the off season they had. I didn't really love it. There were just holes with the team that I thought was going to prevent them from being the tier of baseball team that some people thought they were going to be, which is like elite, top of the pile. Either way, I thought that they were going to be very, 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 very good, and that they would be battling for the division this year, and that they would be at the top of the pile, and we'd be talking about them as one of the best three teams in the American League, one of the best four teams, best top of the three. Now, we keep raising this issue, but and Blair brought it up perfectly in the last block. We don't really know what the gap is between them and the rest of these teams in the wildcard mix, which is really, really troubling because a lot of those teams are actually better suited for the future than the Blue Jays are. Like, they've got nicer foundations, whether it comes to prospects or guys that you can dream on or where they are in their contracts, the flexibility, the what they've put into their free agents. This year feels so unbelievably important, but I just can't help now separating the two things of feelings in this moment, the desperation of them to win night in, night out and be locked in on this baseball team, but also just kind of starting to worry about the future. They won their only game this weekend because Teoscar came up with a massive home run. And if you asked me today who's the most likely guy with a contract not to be on the team next year, I would say Teoscar Hernandez. It's bad. It's just it's just shocking how bad it feels like it is for a team right now that, again, is still sitting at the top of the wild card.
Yeah, and it's tough because on the hitting side, they are the fourth youngest team in all of baseball. So there are still good days ahead. There are peak years ahead. There are people in the system that you could convince yourself are going to help, like a Moreno, like a Aralvis Martinez. On the pitching side, though, they're already one of the older teams in baseball. This regime, at least until recently, has not shown the ability to develop swing and miss relievers, which will always be a thing, which means you're always thinning out your bullpen, or sorry, thinning out your farm system to acquire relief arms. And then you look at the rotation, and it's like, yeah, a lot hinges on Ricky Tiedemann being good sooner than later. You look at Seattle, you know, they haven't made the playoffs in forever, which sucks as a franchise, but they're going to make it this year, I think. And then the one big move they did, Luis Castillo's around. They have J-Rod, who is, you know, a counter to the young Blue Jays in terms of who's going to be good for a really long time. Tampa Bay just always finds new guys in the couch cushions. And then the real concern is Baltimore, because they're good already. They have the best farm system in baseball still. And their general manager, Mike Elias, was speaking on the weekend and basically said, yeah, we have no payroll committed for next year because everyone on our team is a baby who makes the minimum. And we're going to be players.
Yeah. Do you want me to read you off some of the free agents this coming offseason? And yeah, some of these guys
will resign.
Jacob DeGrom, Aaron Judge, Justin Verlander, Carlos Correa, Trey Turner, Carlos Rondon, Xander Bogaerts, Dansby Swanson, Wilson Contreras, Edwin Diaz, Clayton Kershaw, Josh Bell.
Edwin Diaz, they got to get Edwin Diaz.
Chris Bassett, Adam Wainwright, Anthony Rizzo, Luis Severino, Brandon Nemo, Andrew Benintendi, who everybody wanted to hear so bad, Trey Mancini, Nate Eovaldi, Michael Conforto, Kenley Jansen, Aroldis Chapman, Craig Kimbrell, Noah Syndergaard, like J.D. Martinez, Mitch Haniger, go down the line, Sean Manea, Jock Peterson. This is a loaded free agent class, and yeah, if you're a team with money to burn, you feel pretty optimistic about how you can kind of re-tinker your ball club. I'm not sure the Blue Jays are going to be doing that because, Blake, the one thing you said about having the young hitters, I don't think it's disingenuous to say it because it's true, but it's also they started their young hitters very early in the track, and so those guys are going to get paid now. Like, they're not the young hitters in the sense of most of those teams where you'd go, oh, they're the youngest lineup in baseball. Oh, they're 3 years from getting paid. No, Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are going to start entering the give us the money category. Like, that's happening. I would say only Kirk is the young hitter who's going to be making no money next year.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't say it in terms of money, just in terms of you know, how much runway do you have for guys to be good still. And yeah, that's a real issue. And the Kirk thing, like, we're going to have those conversations again about them having three catchers and moving off of one.
Oh, they have to trade one.
Yeah, and then even Aroldis Martinez, if you can look past the strikeouts and you can look past the approach, like, first of all, he's at least a year away. And second of all, like, Matt Chapman is currently in the spot where you would be projecting him for. So it's not doom and gloom. Like, they're in a decent spot as a solid team with some payroll certainty and like a middle of the pack farm system. But when you look at the teams immediately around you and what else is going to happen in the AL East, yeah, it's hard not to feel like this was a year to strike.
Yeah.
The idea of Trey Mancini landing back in Baltimore as a free agent is really funny to me after everything that got made of it this year. Ailish, they can't get Edwin Diaz, though.
But I want him.
I know, but did you see what Felix Bautista's coming out to now as the new Orioles closer?
What is it?
Omar Wisling. Yeah. Now that you're a Wire aficionado.
Omar whistling.
Yeah, oh, Omar, yeah. When he walks down the street and whistles Farmer in the Dell,
yes, I everyone runs now, away. But I thought that was like the name of like, you know, Omar whistling sounds like, you know, I didn't.
But then he said The Wire. That he's
but then I got The Wire. Baltimore. Yes, I'm excited. Yeah. Omar whistling. I haven't seen that. Yeah. I will be looking that up. But Edwin Diaz still undefeated in terms of
I still like, yeah, I still like Edwin Diaz's way more. I'm just saying
Baltimore has a cool one. So
yeah, they definitely have a very cool one. And they just traded away a closer. They're probably going to go with the internal guys because, you know, what the Orioles have done is build a billion guys in their farm system that have swing and miss and turn them into relief pitchers like, you know, most of the successful organizations. To me, it is a little doom and gloom because it just – I don't like where the Jays are at right now, which is the – you have to say the following thing. Hey, you should be afraid of the Jays if they get hot. Okay, who is that not apply to that's a reasonably good baseball team? Sure, I guess their ceiling is a little higher because their hitters can get hotter than a lot of other lineups and they can be deeper when they're fully healthy. But, yeah, we just spoke to Jeff Blair who thinks that, hey, the Springer thing might be an elbow injury that needs surgery in the offseason. This is a guy who's going to be playing through the pain, who they're going to have to limit days in center field. And if they're limiting his days in center field, that means that they're limiting Kirk at-bats as a DH. There's like... This is a team that's
that the worst thing lately?
No, it's not. Well, it's you know what though? I still believe Kirk gives you good ABs. At least when he's going up there, the guy is not an automatic or easy out or for as he's had some bad at bats recently, Blake. We were talking about this, but even yesterday, he's never had a game where he like Vladdy just had, where it's 0-for-4, where it's just what was that? Multiple times. Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask you we used to do this game called Is This Anything? I wanted to ask you an Is This Anything on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Do you mind?
Yeah, go ahead. Am I supposed to answer before?
Yes, we would like to go ahead.
Answer before the...
Talk
before
to me you, like a human.
I don't know what the thing is that I'm saying yes or no to yet.
Well, I like to poke around the stats world from time to time. I like to look at things, but I don't know what I'm doing... the way that you do. And so I'll find some numbers sometimes and I'll try to bring them to you and see if this is kind of just statistical noise or something that actually matters. By the way, we figured out the noise component of the Barrio stuff, which is that his numbers stink against good teams and they're good against bad teams. And it seems like he just got to play more bad teams when he was at home. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this season, runners in scoring position, OPS only .801. Which is not very good, not for a guy of his caliber, especially when you compare him to the greatest hitters around baseball. And I was looking at guys like Jose Ramirez and Aaron Judge, and sure, you can say that those are the best of the best, but they're both over 1,000. They both improve when runners in scoring position. But number of outs in an inning, no outs, Vladdy, OPS over 1,000, one out, .887, two outs, .683. That's in 91 games. That's 166 plate appearances. You add that to obviously the runners in scoring position, and it's actually startling how bad it is. Is that anything to you?
Not. Well, I mean, it's something that like there's a logical explanation for, and it's that with two outs, you can attack Vladimir Guerrero Jr. differently than you would earlier in an inning, right? Like he's such a threat to. Draw a walk, to build a rally, to keep an inning or get an inning going, that I think with two outs you can be a little more aggressive. And over how that's what 166 plate appearances with
just for
outs?
A comparison, Jose Ramirez with two outs this year, .951 OPS with zero, with none, he's .747.
So, yeah, I'm just gonna point out more than half of that sample is with two outs and nobody on. So I do wonder if there's if Vlad gets attacked differently and his approach is a little, we'll say, over aggressive when it's two outs and nobody on. It's maybe, you know, the old swing for the fences kind of thing. I don't know. I'd have to dig in a little bit more, but I do think that legendary hitter gets pitched differently with two outs and nobody on is like a decent part way to the explanation there. The runners in scoring position thing is more, much more a Vlad thing than a pitcher thing. Like you can't be a star hitter and hit worse in situations where most guys hit better.
Yeah. Two outs, runners in scoring position. Vladdy's OPS is .545 this year. Yeah.
Now the tough part about it is like last year he was very good in those situations. Like he was a monster. So I don't think it's like some inherent flaw with Vlad that can't get figured out. But it's happened, and it's probably cost them like a good chunk of offense.
Yeah, I don't think that it's something he can't get better at. I think that there is definitely some statistical noise there, given that that's 50 plate appearances, what I just mentioned there, right? The mm-hmm. two outs with runners in scoring position. But hitting 150 in those spots, an OPS under 600 in those spots, that's hurt them this year. And I think that it leads to my belief about this ball club, which is a lot of it so much still is under the... This baseball team needs Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be one of the best 10 players in baseball to win year over year. That is the gambit here. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and it should be higher. I'm being kind of generous, I think, saying top 10. I think we all believed going into this year that it could be even higher, considering, you know, he was runner-up for MVP last year mm-hmm. with Shohei Ohtani, and that in any other year he would have been the winner of this award, that we all came into this. He was one of the MVP favorites. I actually believe that it should be higher than that. But let's say conservatively top 10 player in baseball. He hasn't been that this year. And we can look at all these different issues, but to me, it's like that's not the worst among them, but it is one of those ones where you're almost the most concerned about it, because it's the lasting one. It's the one that has the longest effect throughout the rest of the lineup. Anyway, I'll try to be a little bit more optimistic now. Just after watching this weekend and really believing that they were going to come through against Cleveland and win at least two of these three games, and watching the defense and the Gausman start, and now they go up against Baltimore with Yusei Kikuchi because they're defending Alek Manoah innings, I kind of feel sick about this ball club right now, and it's really hard for me to try to spin this and go, well, this could happen. Well, do the good things, and then we'll talk about the good things. All you've been doing is bad things, so I'm going to talk about the bad things.
Wait, does having six starters again not make you feel better when three of them are Barrios, Kikuchi, and Mitch White? Do you not feel way better about things? Yeah.
Again, did you see Kikuchi?
At least Ross Stripling's back Wednesday.
Yeah, I know. Ross Stripling's back, who they're going to have to make sure also is protected when it comes to innings.
It's like I have a not conspiracy theory, but like I do think part of the nobody knew he was hurt. Suddenly he goes down. It's a minimum DL stint, and he makes a full-length start at AAA. I kind of wonder if that was a let's get you a rest for the stretch run kind of injury.
I hope so, mm-hmm. because I'm not going to do this take until Ross comes back and proves himself to be healthy and to be fine. But I guess I am doing this take right now. But with given Barrios' numbers, 6.61 ERA, in 15 starts against clubs with better than 500 records, given his numbers this year, you're definitely not going to do it, but I think it should at least be considered. If Stripling finishes the season strong and those numbers continue for Barrios, that it would at least be a conversation who gets the start in the third game. Should at least
I
be
think
a conversation.
It would be a real conversation.
Yeah, it should at least be a conversation. And before it wasn't, but these last two Barrios starts and now taking those splits, it is one to me.
And if you think about how you would want to build, like, let's not even, like, say Stripling gets a start, but you take it more of a, like, Kyle Yarbrough, Drew Rasmussen approach, right? Where it's like, you're the starter, but really you're the bulk guy starting a game. Ross Stripling is a more certain, what are you getting two times through the order? Versus if you get into a must-win game and your starter doesn't make it out of the second inning, like that is really disruptive to how you play the rest of the game. Whereas even if you get five and dive or four and door or whatever from Stripling, that's like a known thing. You can set your bullpen up. You can have a more methodical game plan for a day like that than the boom or bust that Barrios and Kikuchi are. I think it's just it's an easier day on the manager and bullpen that way.
Too many busts. All right. No busts here, though, with the Wake and Rake. Just, again, another winning. Thank you for all the slips that people love to send me. You can always tweet and DM, shoot them on Instagram, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at Blake Murphy ODC. Our bets today, Ailish Forfar, are you going to be placing a bet on the Toronto Blue Jays with Yusei Kikuchi on the mound?
I'll be placing a bet in that game, correct?
Okay. And what will it be?
Well, I just think it looks like a big run night. Depending on which team you're going to get the runs. I'm not going to specify that. But it's obviously the books know that, so the over-unders are quite high. But I see some value in the first five over with plus money. It's plus 112. The first three over, which is over 2.5, is minus 148. So that's a pretty significant difference. I like the over 5.5 in the first five. With these two on the mound, Bradish has a 6.4 ERA, Kikuchi with a 5.2 ERA. I kind of like that. And if Kikuchi gets pulled early, well, we just talked about the bullpen not being the most reliable. So I think that's going to be my wake and rake pick. First five over in the Blue Jays game. And also we'll be watching it anyway. So I'm hoping the fans see lots of runs.
I actually think that that number is low for those two guys.
Mm-hmm. And plus money.
Which is, well, no, but that's actually what usually gives me the red flag always, where I'm like, why is this low?
Perfect. I guess you don't like my bet. That's good.
No. It's not that I don't like the bet. It's that
usually that means it's going to win.
No, that I wonder if they're just already looking at this as, okay, they're going to pull Kikuchi. But here's the deal. This is why it's good for the over is, and not that you want to root against the Blue Jays, but Mitch White is not coming in relief for, like, this is going to be, this is Kikuchi and Trent Thornton, okay? Like, that's the thing that you know you're buying into with the Kikuchi starts is that you're not just buying Kikuchi, you're buying Trent Thornton still. He's the piggyback for him. So 9 didn't really seem like that low of a number. I guess Baltimore's bullpen is what you're afraid of, is that if they can stake themselves to a lead into the 7th inning, if they can just get through the Bradish start, that they'll be there. But no, I think that this is the right play for tonight when it comes to betting this baseball game. Blake, any thoughts on this one?
Not really, no. I mean, the answer to why it feels low is just like, it's really hard to push a 5-inning line higher than 5.5. Like, it just, even with shaky starters, it just doesn't happen all that often. It's a reasonable play. I don't think this is going to be a very good pitching matchup. And yeah, the one question I guess you have is, do the Jays bats wake up against a guy who on paper, again, they should have a fair time with, but have not delivered against those guys.
They have not delivered against those guys whatsoever. At least Baltimore, this should be at least a halfway decent spot. The last month, they've been pretty middle of the pack against left-handed pitching, for whatever that's worth. I don't know if you can even apply those stats to Kikuchi, because again, he's been the worst starter in baseball those last 10. So taking them and saying, hey, this is the sample that you want to use, is not so easy to do. Would you like to guess my bet tonight, Blake Murphy?
Yes, Miami, San Diego, 5-inning under.
Wrong. I did want to do that. I went the other way. I'm going to go with Luis Castillo and Shohei Ohtani with the under, the first five. I just want to watch. I want to watch this baseball game, and I do not love the slate. I actually like the Musgrove Alcantara bet.
Like, that was my backup one.
But they're so good, but the line is so low.
I even was going to do a no runs first inning, and it was -155 for that.
Yeah, guess what? I'm also playing that.
Me too, I am. As a side.
I will say now, that is my wake and rake pick. Miami, San Diego, 5-inning under, 3.5. I had a backup because I thought JD was taking that one, but that's my pick.
Oh, it's at 3.5. What's the juice on that right now? Well, I'm
it
jumping
was
on that
minus 136 when I wrote it down on my sheet to bet it.
All right, that's pretty good, because the full game is 6.5. So I just looked at it and assumed that it was going to be a 2.5 on the 5 runs. So I went away from it.
That's a team play, guys. We all wanted that one.
We all like that one.
Under 3.5, minus 136.
Oh, that's great. That's great value for what I think is a good one tonight. So yeah, to me, I want to watch. I want to watch Shohei Ohtani pitch. I rarely do it. And Luis Castillo's playing for the Mariners. You get to root a little bit against Seattle, hoping that they can stay down in the standings. It's, a tiny little bit of a hedge, hoping that there maybe are a little bit of runs scored in this game. But, yeah, the under 3.5 in the first five innings is minus 127. So slightly better juice, slightly worse pitchers. Kind of makes sense to me. I also don't trust this Angels lineup right now. I think Castillo is rolling. It looks like what a acquisition this guy has been for Seattle. If you want to talk about one team changing the way they play post deadline, getting excited, and having a guy that steps in and just dominates versus one team that's had Mitch White and Whit Merrifield doing exactly what Whit Merrifield did. And who was it that texted Whit Merrifield on the number? Oh, it was
Zach Greinke.
Zach Greinke's like, hey, you're unlucky. The unluckiness continues in Toronto with Whit. Pretty much exact same stats. I think actually they've been a touch worse.
So plus 560 on our parlay, and over and two unders seems like a pretty good bet. I like it. We got to keep rolling here.
Yeah, we got to keep rolling. Build up those accounts, because football season is not like it's. I'm basically.
Did you lose any money this weekend?
No, I actually, this weekend was a decent weekend, but I didn't really bet on preseason football. I won't lie. I kind of kept forgetting about its existence between like
probably
hangovers
best,
and going out and then putting it on NFL Network and throwing it there. But no, I'm very much a, like when you see those movies with prisoners and the cell scratching the things into the wall to mark the days. That's me for the football season now. We're there. We're in range. From JD, Blake, and Ailish, thanks so much for listening. Good luck with the Wake and Rake. Good luck with the parlays tonight. May Gambler be with you.